The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Coral W. Peach presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Oh, very good. Thank you very much. Let's see, making sure I'm on. Okay, good afternoon. This is Judge Peach, and I'm joined by Judge Greenberg and Judge Jaquith. We are convened today via video teleconference to consider arguments in the case of Randolph Wilson versus Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 19-3791. Will counsel, beginning with appellate's counsel, please make your appearance for our record?
Good morning, Your Honor, or good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Javier Santongio, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Randolph Wilson, and I'm joined today by co-counsel, Victoria Tamayo.
Thank you. Counsel for the secretary.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the court, Abhinav Goyal with Megan Crowell on behalf of the secretary.
Thank you very much, and I understand that appellant's counsel would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, fine. Thank you. And if counsel are ready, let's begin with appellate's counsel. Mr.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. In 2013, Mr. Wilson filed his claim for bilateral hearing loss, which was eventually granted with a 0% rating in June of 2016. In September 2016, Mr. Wilson appealed the 0% rating. Mr. Wilson's notice of disagreement was accompanied by a statement that his hearing loss was substantial. In this statement, which can be found in the record at page 501, he also requested reevaluation of his hearing loss and additional testing besides just being placed in a booth and asked to press a button when he hears a sound. In January 2017, the VA issued a statement of the case continuing Mr. Wilson's 0% rating for bilateral hearing loss. In response, Mr. Wilson filed a VA Form 9, wherein he expressly raised the claim for peripheral vestibular disorder, or PVD, secondary to his hearing loss, and stated that he suffered from dizziness and occasional staggering as a result of this condition. On November 27, 2018, the board issued the decision here on appeal, denying Mr. Wilson entitlement to an increased rating for his bilateral hearing loss. We are here today because we believe this court's recent holding in Bailey v. Wilkie, 33 Vet App 188, requires remand of the board's November 2018 decision to allow the board to address whether the evidence Mr. Wilson submitted regarding PVD, dizziness and staggering, warranted consideration for service connection secondary to a service-connected hearing loss.
Mr. Santosio, did the appellant record all of his PVDs as being secondary with dizziness and staggering? Was that all on the VA Form 9?
Yes, Your Honor. The statement he made on the VA Form 9 at 446, the record at 446, the statement he made, Your Honor, may I
yes.
State, yeah, okay, Your Honor. He said, I was placed in a soundproof booth and asked to press a button when I heard sound. There was no testing for peripheral vestibular disorders, which does cause me to have dizziness and occasional staggering.
And did the appellant actually bring this to the attention of the person giving the test, or is this a statement that they didn't test me for PVD? Did he bring it up to the tester?
It's not clear from the record whether he did or not, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Santongio, is there any evidence of record, lay or medical, to suggest that the veteran's dizziness and staggering are related to his hearing loss or to his tinnitus?
Judge Jaquith, yes, Your Honor. We believe there is lay evidence when you take everything that was stated in the notice of disagreement that he filed. It's at the record at 501. He filed a statement with his notice of disagreement, basically stating that his hearing loss was substantial. It should be rated higher. And then following that up with the VA Form 9, which the VA itself recognized as a recognized that he mentioned PVD and these symptoms of dizziness and staggering, and then proceeded to send him a development letter.
And Mr. Wilson didn't specifically contend that he was claiming secondary service connection, did he?
No, Your Honor.
If the mere mention of PVD or dizziness and staggering is sufficient, what's left of the formal claim requirements spelled out in the regulation?
Well, we don't feel that this was just a mere mention, Your Honor. If we're looking at the evidence of record and that we're trying to gather what Mr. Wilson reasonably expected was included within his hearing loss claim, then it's clear that this claim, you know, should have been included under the court's recent holding in Bailey.
Why shouldn't the Form 9 statement regarding PVD be construed merely as an intent to file a claim for that condition?
Well, because the court recognized in Bailey that when adjudicating a proper rating for a formally claimed service-connected condition, the VA is required to develop and adjudicate related claims for secondary service connection for disabilities that are reasonably raised during the adjudication of that primary service-connected disability. In Mr. Wilson's case, the formally claimed primary service-connected disability is bilateral hearing loss, and the related claim for secondary service connection is PVD with symptoms of dizziness and staggering.
But in Bailey, there was so much more evidence in the record. That there were examinations discussing the complications in that case, which was, I think, swelling of the legs, diarrhea, and other things associated with his underlying, with his prostate cancer. So there was so much more evidence right there in the record that the reasonably raised was very easy to determine that. But other than the statement of Mr. Wilson that they didn't ask me about my PVD, what other evidence is there?
Your Honor, we feel that expressly raised claim in the VA Form 9 is covered as expressly claimed or expressly raised, that is sufficient to expressly raise that claim. And I'll note that the board didn't even address any of this evidence. So we can't really get to that, whether or not there is sufficient evidence to establish entitlement, which we're not arguing. We're not trying to say that he should have been granted a PVD claim. We're just saying that the board should not have completely ignored this evidence, that his PVD, which this condition he believed to have, and the symptoms associated with that condition of staggering and dizziness were related to his service-connected hearing loss.
But didn't the wasn't he provided a form that says we understand you have PVD, we understand you've mentioned PVD, here's the form, fill it out. And then when they went back to check to follow up on it and say, do you have any other claims, he said no and didn't pursue that.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think, even if he did pursue that claim, I don't think it would have been outcome determinative, which I will cover more, but If you look at the actual correspondence that was sent after the VA recognized the mention of PVD and these symptoms, the letter they sent to him, it's at the record at 433, dated April 7, 2017, does not state what claims or for which claims he should file for. So it says, merely, we received your correspondence indicating that you would like to file a claim for benefits. VA regulations now require all claims to be submitted on a standardized form. That's all that letter said. And in response to that, which further supports his belief that the PVD and the dizziness and staggering were encompassed within the hearing loss claim stream that was already on appeal, is the statement he writes back, dated April 12, 2017, which is found at page 430 of the record, where he says, he references the letter and he says, I have no further claims to submit at this time. I'm requesting that the appeal process continue.
So what did he mean by that?
Well, in our opinion, he meant that he believed from the NOD that he filed back in January 2015 with the statement saying that his rating should be higher, in conjunction with the statement contained in the VA Form 9 regarding the PVD and the symptoms and the failure to be provided with the additional testing, that he believed it all fell under hearing loss, that everything was related to hearing loss.
So your argument, as I understand it, well, let me ask you this. If Bailey hadn't been decided, would you still be making the argument that what the veteran submitted was sufficient to shift the burden to the secretary to consider those claims?
I think so, because the Congress's intent here is that the VA will fully and sympathetically adjudicate the claims for veterans, as they outlined in the Federal Circuit's decision in Hodge v. West. And that sympathetic reading, I think we would arrive at the same result.
And you notwithstanding, let's say, the greater amount of evidence in Bailey, you believe the veteran here has made a sufficient showing to come within our holding in Bailey?
Yes, Your Honor. And further, if I may, if the court were to hold that Bailey applies only to claims for secondary service connection that are reasonably raised by the record, it'd create a situation where veterans would be penalized for expressly raising symptoms and conditions they believe to be related to or complications of their current service-connected disability. It would discourage veterans from fully disclosing what symptoms they suffer from and what conditions they believe to be related to their service-connected disabilities, which would be inconsistent with the pro-claimant structure of the veterans' benefit system.
Thank you.
Mr. Santonzio, how does the veteran's PVD meet the Bailey definition of complication as used in 38 CFR 3155 D2?
Yes, Your Honor. So when we're looking at essentially how it meets that, we have to look at, I think, what the VA has done itself and the criteria, the rating criteria for PVD and how the VA treats it. So if you look at the what the VA has done within the rating criteria and board decisions, also recent board decisions, it recognizes the interplay between the hearing loss and other ear disabilities such as PVD. In fact, the diagnostic code for PVD 6204, it's found under 38 CFR section 4.87, which is titled Diseases of the Ear. This diagnostic code specifically acknowledges that a hearing impairment is often accompanied with PVD. In the note under 6204, the VA clarifies that any accompanying hearing impairment should be rated separately. So I think when you look at what not only what the VA rating criteria is, but what the VA has done and how it has adjudicated these type of claims, it's clear that the veteran's belief that the PVD, dizziness, and staggering were related to his already service-connected hearing loss, it just reinforces that, Your Honor.
Is there any evidence on this record that PVD is or could be secondary to hearing loss or vice versa?
Your Honor, unfortunately, there's not, but that's due to the board's failure to address in its statement of reasons or basis whether or not this claim for secondary service connection was either reasonably or expressly raised. So we can't get to that because of the board's failure. And, you know, the board, when adjudicating secondary service connection, their duty to assist requires that they also provide a medical opinion that addresses the etiology of that condition.
If the veteran believed that PVD should have been associated with his hearing loss claim, why didn't he address that in his appeal of the hearing loss evaluation when he filed his September 2016 NOD, only contesting the assigned rating?
Well, Your Honor, it's hard for me to say for certain, but we're dealing with a pro se claimant, not represented. It's not a medical doctor. We have to basically liberally construe what was filed and what he communicated and look at it as a whole to make that determination. So, you know, I'm not sure why he didn't, but I don't think that rises to a level where the board should not have addressed whether or not this secondary claim for PVD, dizziness and staggering, was entitled to secondary service connection.
Thanks very much.
All right, Your Honors, if I may continue, is there any other questions at this time?
I don't have any more right now.
Okay. So now I'll turn to the requirement that Mr. Wilson file a separate formal claim, which was brought up by the Secretary. So Mr. Wilson's argument that he was not required to file a separate formal claim for secondary service connection for PVD is supported under the law by more than just the Bailey decision, as discussed earlier. In Morgan v. Wilkie, this court held that the VA's duty to maximize benefits requires it to exhaust all reasonably raised or expressly raised scheduler alternatives for evaluating a disability. This includes entitlement to a secondary service connection, even though the appellant did not file a separate formal claim for such secondary service connection. Such secondary service condition. 38 CFR 3.155D2, which we discussed earlier, states that the VA will also consider all lay and medical evidence of record in order to adjudicate entitlement to benefits for the claim condition, as well as entitlement to any additional benefits for complications of the claim condition, including those identified by the rating criteria for that condition. And again, the interplay there within the rating code, the diagnostic criteria, also supports that the rating criteria for this condition, the interrelatedness of hearing loss and PVD and other disorders, the vertigo, Meniere's disease, that are diseases of the ear. Bailey and this court's decisions post-Bailey have discussed how 3.155D2 does not require claimants to file separate formal claims for secondary service connection if the disability falls under complications. That's because the amendments to 3.155 did not, in the VA's own words, alter VA's general practice of identifying and adjudicating issues and claims that logically relate to and arise in connection with a claim pending before VA. Bailey further highlighted secondary service connection claim, secondary service connections claims as benefits that would qualify as complications that would be developed and adjudicated under 3.155D2, whether or not raised expressly by the claimant. Now I'll turn to the Secretary's argument that VA's Mr. Wilson's VA Form 9 was an informal claim for PVD. The VA Form 9, again, can be found in the record at 446. So the Secretary argues that Mr. Wilson's VA Form 9 was an informal claim for PVD. The Secretary further contends that Mr. Wilson's failure to respond to the VA's April 2017 correspondence, which the Secretary classifies as development of a claim, excuses the board from any obligation to address Mr. Wilson's PVD claim. However, as discussed earlier, the correspondence relied on by the Secretary does not indicate for which condition Mr. Wilson is supposed to file a formal claim. This cannot be said to satisfy the VA's duty to assist Mr. Wilson in this case.
Counselor, are you able to tell us what prompted, from the record, what prompted the VA to send Mr. Wilson the VA Form 9? Because you did mention that a letter dated, I think it record at, see, where was the, well, the letter from the RO was at record 433, just simply didn't even mention PVD. But then what prompted them to send him the VA form for him to fill out?
So in our opinion, Your Honor, the statement made in the VA Form 9 that there was no testing for peripheral vestibular disorders, which does cause me to have dizziness and occasional staggering, which is at 446 in the record, is what then triggered the VA in its deferred rating decision at 443. It says on the F9 received on February 27, 2017, the veteran mentions peripheral vestibular disorder with dizziness and staggering. Please send the veteran a letter and application for his claim. And again, the letter they sent doesn't mention what claim. It doesn't give him any guidance. It's merely appears to be a boilerplate letter that was sent to him. Your Honor?
Yeah, thank you.
So if I may, counsel, what you're arguing is, among other things, that the benefit of the doubt should be given to the veteran in terms of what he intended by his approach to the writings from the secretary.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's right. Now, remind me again what happened. Was there an actual hearing where he showed up and a member of the board, whether it was virtually or in person, and he made his claim?
No, Your Honor. The claim was made in the VA Form 9.
Right. So he didn't have the benefit, if there were a hearing, of being able to explain to a member of the board who shows up and is in charge and is required by statute to make himself familiar with the entire file of the veteran before conducting the hearing. And in my view, to assist in the perfection of the appeal, even at that stage. So is that another reason why the benefit of the doubt should be given to the veteran here? And is that concept consistent with overall congressional intent?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe it is. And I think that if we are looking at the record and, basically giving the sympathetic reading of the record, I think we get there with either the sympathetic reading or the doubt being resolved in the veteran's favor in this case.
Thank you.
Okay, so if I may continue. The secretary relies on this court's holding in Bailey to support the argument that the regional office's development and Mr. Wilson's claim for PVD was outcome determinative. However, the secretary misreads Bailey. In fact, this same argument was rejected in Bailey and by later decisions interpreting Bailey. In Bailey, the secretary made the same argument he now makes in Mr. Wilson's case, that since the regional office already adjudicated a separate claim stream for the secondary condition, the board did not need to address secondary service connection when making a decision on the primary claim stream for hearing loss because this issue became moot. The court rejected this argument by relying on Warren v. McDonald and finding that the board was still required to address secondary service connection in the primary claim stream because any RO grant of secondary service connection and assignment of an effective date for a separate claim stream could not and did not divest the board of jurisdiction over the appeal. It would be unjust to require an appellant to continue to pursue a separate claim stream through filing a formal claim, as the secretary suggests, because if granted, that claim would result in the grant of benefits at a later effective date than what the appellant would otherwise be entitled to receive. Mr. Wilson, rather astutely, recognized this potential loss of retroactive benefits and articulated to the VA that he was not adding any new claims, but rather considered the PVD claim as already on appeal. I'm out of time, Your Honor.
How much more do you have in your prepared statements? Since we took up so much of your time with questions, let's add two more minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I proceed, Your Honor?
Yes, please.
In closing, we respectfully request that the court vacate the board's November 2018 decision for failing to provide an adequate statement of reasons or basis and remand the matter to the board so it can properly address Mr. Wilson's entitlement to secondary service connection for PVD. PVD was an expressly raised claim for secondary service connection that the board has not yet addressed and that the RO could not have fully and finally resolved even if Mr. Wilson decided to continue with a separate claim stream. Although the RO could have subsequently granted secondary service connection for PVD through the separate claim stream, any RO decision could not have divested the board of its jurisdiction over the appellant's initial appeal for hearing loss. The appellant's failure to pursue the separate claim stream did not change the VA's longstanding obligation to develop and adjudicate claims for secondary service connection that are raised during the processing of a properly initiated claim as to the primary service connected disabilities evaluation level, which is exactly what we have here, as he has continually appealed the rating for the bilateral hearing loss. In Barrett v. Nicholson, 466 F3rd 1039, the Federal Circuit held that the government's interest in veterans' cases is not that it shall win, but rather that justice shall be done, that all veterans so entitled receive the benefits due to them. The secretary's position in this case is inconsistent with this holding, as it denies Mr. Wilson the mere consideration of eligibility for secondary service connection for his PVD. Justice requires that Mr. Wilson's case be remanded to the board so they can address his PVD dizziness and staggering. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Cole?
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Abhinav Goyal, and with Deputy Chief Counsel Megan Kral, I represent the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. There are two key questions before this court today, Your Honors. The first is a legal question that this court asked in its June 2021 supplemental order. The court asked if Bailey should be applicable to Form 9s. The second is a factual question. Assuming that Bailey can indeed be extended to Form 9s, the question becomes whether such an extension should apply to this case, and even if Bailey does apply, whether any development required under Bailey has already been undertaken. The secretary submits that Bailey could, generally speaking, apply to Form 9s. But the court's decision in Bailey also set forth certain contours and explained when entitlement to secondary service connection is raised by the record. Here, unlike Bailey, appellant has not presented a diagnosis of an ancillary condition. He has not presented a diagnosis of PVD, contrary to the requirements set forth in Diagnostic Code 6204 of an objective diagnosis. He has also denied dizziness, not only prior to the submission of his February 2017 appeal form, but also subsequent to the submission of that form, he continued to deny dizziness. And he has not presented any indication of a relationship between the disability on appeal, which is bilateral hearing loss, and any other condition. Such a relationship is required not only under Bailey, but also under McClendon, the Federal Circuit's holding in Waters v. Shinseki, and under Long to warrant extra scheduler discussion. Moreover, even if Bailey were to apply here, the court in Bailey remanded for additional development, and here such additional development in a case which is pre-Bailey was already undertaken by the regional office's request to appellant that he submit additional information and a form and a claims form for PVD.
Mr. Boyle, excuse me, before you get too far on that, is the standard different for a claim reasonably raised by the record where the adjudicative authority has to deduce, infer, if you will, a claim than in one where the claim is expressly stated?
Respectfully, Your Honor, if I'm understanding your question, the claim of PVD in this particular case was indeed expressly stated. But there is no indication here that the PVD was argued as related to hearing loss, which is the disability on appeal.
But my question is, granting that Bailey has a more extensive factual development from which the Bailey court concluded that the record reasonably raised the unstated claim, does it stand to reason that you have to have more factual development to see and infer a reasonably raised claim than is necessary to see and address a specifically stated claim?
Yes, Your Honor. A specifically stated claim as to secondary service connection for PVD in this case would require certain language as the court set forth in Bailey. That language is not only required by the court's holding in Bailey, but also to warrant an examination under McClendon, an appellant or a claimant would have to present such an indication of a nexus of a relationship between the disability on appeal and any ancillary condition. So the expressly raised claim here in appellant's form 9 was only PVD. And he also said that his PVD is the one that causes dizziness or staggering, not that his hearing loss causes those issues. So to the extent that claim was expressly raised, the claim for PVD, it was a new claim stream and the regional office properly developed that claim as an entirely separate claim.
How did they do that?
In February 2017, after the appellant's submission of his statement that his PVD causes dizziness and staggering, in April 2017, the regional office acknowledged in a deferred rating decision that appellant sought compensation for PVD. Subsequent to that, the same month, the regional office invited appellant to submit a claims form. And the same month, appellant responded to that letter, refusing to do so, and instead opted that his hearing loss appeal should continue.
How does a form letter that doesn't note what the potential claim was do what you just described? How could the veteran be expected to know what was being suggested?
The claims form was in response to the appellant's form 9, Your Honor, and it is conceded that the claims form did not, or the letter from the regional office did not mention PVD, but that likely could have been for any number of reasons. The regional office cannot anticipate what other claims appellant might have had at that time if he had other claims related or unrelated to ear conditions. Appellant could have submitted those claims at that time as well.
But that would be easy to address, right? You could say PVD, dizziness, staggering, and any other claims you have.
Yes, Your Honor.
But that didn't happen.
that did not happen, Your Honor. Again, the court's June 2021 order rather focused on this court's holding in Bailey. And to bring us back to that secondary service connection issue, Bailey is simply not implicated here. Turning to that, if that answers your question.
Well, I guess while we're on the topic, I should ask if it's the VA's position that the Form 9 only amounted to an intent to claim. I want to ask you if the RO's response was similarly deficient. It doesn't fulfill the requirements of 3.155B3, does it?
It does, Your Honor, to the extent it is a new claim for PVD, but to the extent pre-Bailey, this was a claim for a secondary service connection for PVD. The regional office, once again, was working under a pre-Bailey scenario under which a claim was required as to secondary service connection issues as well. And admittedly, the regional office did not note PVD or dizziness on the claims form or on the letter that was submitted to appellant. But appellant likewise did not respond with any assertion that he had PVD or that his claim should be for PVD, dizziness, or staggering. Instead,
hadn't he already done that? That's what was on the Form 9 he submitted in February of 2017.
Yes, Your Honor, but there should have been additional development. There could have been additional development had appellant provided information as to, for instance, what causes his PVD, when he was treated for PVD, whether it was being alleged as directly related to service or as secondary related to hearing loss or a different disability. Any VA examiners or private examiners that he got treated by for the PVD. So all that information and all that development could have occurred had appellant responded with a proper claims form, and he would have been able to get that effective date for the PVD as well.
Or if the VA had responded and advised the veteran of the information necessary to complete the appropriate application and support the claim.
Yes, Your Honor. We at that time, there was a need for a formal claim because we were still working under a pre-Bailey scenario. And that is what the regional office did here. To the extent the regional office could have specifically reported that, hey, this is only a PVD claim, that would have, again, limited any assertion, any future assertion by the appellant to any prospective other claims that he intended to file for. We cannot speculate, Your Honors, what appellant was thinking at that time or what claims he could have applied for in response to the regional office's letter.
Well, even if there's bilateral blame, let's call it, for the lack of information, how does an uninformative form letter bear the weight of an impenetrable roadblock to consideration of the veteran's claim of dizziness and staggering warranting examination for PVD?
There are several avenues, Your Honor, in which an appellant could get further development and examination, for instance, for his PVD claim, had the record demonstrated an indication of a diagnosis of PVD, which is required under Diagnostic Code 6204. Had appellant showed some argument or some indication that his PVD was related to hearing loss or that he had dizziness or staggering because of his hearing loss, this case would indeed come under Bailey's provision under McClendon. And we submit that the board, if applied Bailey, would have to address the issue of entitlement to secondary service connection for those conditions. But appellant has foregone any claim for PVD as a direct service connection claim in his argument. The only issue left before us is whether entitlement to secondary service connection under Bailey was raised by the record. And our submission is that appellant's continual denial of dizziness, not only prior to his 2017 submission, but also subsequent to that submission in October 2018, March 2018, and July 2018, he continued to deny, specifically deny having dizziness. He has not been diagnosed with any PVD as required by diagnostic code 6204. And he has not shown any indication of a relationship other than a lay assertion that he has been service connected in his briefs only, that he has been service connected for hearing loss and tinnitus.
Well, I hate to dominate the floor, so the more learned judges should interrupt me at any time, but let's talk about that relationship situation. Didn't VA itself set the standard here when in adopting the formal claims requirement, it explained that the regulation 3.155 did not alter VA's general practice of identifying and adjudicating issues and claims that logically relate to and arise in connection with a claim pending before VA, whether or not raised expressly by the claimant? Oh, isn't that the standard here, according to the agency?
That is the standard, Your Honor, yes.
And hasn't the relatedness, if you will, of hearing loss and dizziness and staggering been recognized in our cases? Duchette v. Shulkin, for example, which lists dizziness and recurrent loss of balance as symptoms or functional impairment of a hearing loss sufferer might experience.
Yes, Your Honor, Doucette did not lay a medical determination as to dizziness or staggering being always related to hearing loss. Instead, Doucette only pointed out that to the extent the record or a lay claimant reports symptoms other than symptoms such as inability to hear or difficulty communicating, which is part of the hearing loss, if the claimant submits evidence or arguments as to the relationship of those symptoms to hearing loss, then the board would be required to address extra scheduler referral. Here, once again, we submit that appellant's statement only reports that his PVD is the one that causes dizziness or staggering. And diagnostic code 6204, Your Honor, specifically requires a diagnosis of PVD. He has not presented any such diagnosis. If I can read from the note supporting the diagnostic code, objective findings supporting the diagnosis of vestibular disequilibrium are required before a compensable evaluation can be assigned. So here you go.
But we're talking about a lay claimant here, as most all of them are, and we're left without any information from a medical expert regarding any relationship between hearing loss and tinnitus, dizziness, staggering, and PVD, because the veteran was denied access to a VA examination. Isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so the agency explanation that the veteran had to spell that out. I mean, isn't the import of cases such as Clemens that we don't demand legal and medical knowledge from veterans and we won't even accept their efforts to offer it?
Respectfully, Your Honor, we submit that it is not. The Federal Circuit in Waters v. Shinseki was very clear on this respect. The claimant in Waters v. Shinseki argued that his lay assertion as to a nexus was sufficient, but the Federal Circuit rejected that argument, explaining that if a lay statement as to a nexus was enough, the VA would be required to provide a VA examination in almost every case. Instead, what is needed under McClendon, Bailey, Long, and even Waters v. Shinseki is at least an indication, as was present in Mr. Bailey's case, that a VA examiner acknowledged the feasibility of a relationship between the disability on appeal, prostate cancer, and diarrhea and lower extremity lymphedema. We do not have any such acknowledgement by a VA examiner. We don't even have the appellant's statement that his hearing loss causes PVD or a report to the VA examiner that he has dizziness, to the May 2016 examiner that he has dizziness. On the contrary, he denied having any dizziness prior to, in treatment records, he repeatedly denied having any dizziness.
But regarding the causation situation, I thought you'd agreed that logical relationship is what's required, not a showing of causation.
It is difficult to define what logical relationship would be, Your Honor, but the court has already set forth the contours within which there could be such a logical relationship established. We have the court's holdings in McClendon, Bailey, the Federal Circuit's holding in Waters, again, explaining that lay assertions are simply not enough. And to the extent there could be a logical relationship merely because the ear conditions are all rated separately, or because PVD and hearing loss are conditions of the same body part, that is simply too tenuous of a relationship to establish that indication of a relationship, that indication of causation.
None of those cases tackle the meaning of logically related, though, do they?
I don't think they do, Your Honor.
And doesn't the context of the veteran's claim make clear that he's asserting that his hearing loss and his dizziness and occasional staggering are intertwined?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, could you please repeat?
Sure. Doesn't the context of the veteran's claim, his February 2017 Form 9, make clear that he is asserting that his hearing loss and his dizziness and occasional staggering are intertwined?
It is unclear, Your Honor, whether appellant was alleging his PVD to be related to his hearing loss or not. Simply because it is in a hearing loss appeal context is not enough. Appellant, if I could hypothesize, appellant could have reported that he has a leg condition or a separate body part condition which causes, you know, hearing loss, or a completely separate condition that he wants compensation for. The regional office, once again, would submit him a claims form to develop that condition or compensation for that condition, but the board would not be required to address the theory of entitlement to secondary service connection for that condition unless there was some relationship. Simply reporting a new claim on a claims form is just not enough to raise a completely new claim. Had such a claim been raised, properly raised under Bailey, then yes, there would be development of that claim and there would be a determination as to whether there is nexus or not.
Well, sure, it could have happened that way, but that's not how it happened.
It did not, Your Honor.
Anne writes a paragraph that is appealing his hearing loss rating and illustrates his problems with that rating with a series of statements. And one of those statements is, I suffer from dizziness and staggering, and they didn't even test in my hearing test for PVD. This is not in the middle of a hearing loss claim, him contending that he has a knee injury. This is talking about the very testing and the very rating that's at issue. So how in that context can you say that it's not logically related, if that's the standard?
It is entirely unclear, Your Honor, what appellant or why he mentioned PVD, or that his PVD causes dizziness or staggering. It is understandable that he may have felt that he should have been tested for PVD. And to the extent he felt that he should have been tested for PVD, we requested that he submit a claims form and submit additional information so that the regional office, so that the VA could indeed develop that claim and assist him in developing that claim. But the question once again is as to secondary service connection here, and the contours set forth in Bailey are simply not met. Even in the if we look at appellant's statement in the context of a hearing loss claim, the claim once again was an increased rating for hearing loss, and simply reporting other conditions on that claim does not arise to the level required under Bailey, does not show that those ancillary conditions are a result of or are related to hearing loss, especially in this case, Your Honor, because PVD requires a specific diagnosis, an objective diagnosis, before any service connection or compensable rating can be assigned for PVD. Here we have no diagnosis of PVD throughout the record. We have appellant's submissions, repeated submissions, that he does not have any dizziness, and we have an utter failure to show how relation, how hearing loss causes those conditions. So simply reporting them on a hearing loss appeals form is not enough to show that logical relationship.
Well, what more was he supposed to do to satisfy the secretary on this? It sounds as if he is supposed to submit everything in advance and come to a conclusion that he's entitled to the benefit of the particular regulation. Hasn't he raised the issue expressly in connection with his hearing loss? And then it's up to the government to say yes or no, but it's got to give him a chance to be heard in plain English.
Respectfully, Your Honor.
What more was he supposed to submit? And why didn't you tell him to do that?
Respectfully, Your Honor, this court did set forth certain contours in Bailey, which are simply not met here. He could have reported that his dizziness was a symptom to the VA examiner. He could have otherwise reported dizziness in his treatment records. He could have reported imbalance or staggering in treatment records or to a VA examiner who was looking at his hearing loss claim. There could have been a number of things that could have been done, but to the extent he reported that he has PVD, we attempted to develop that claim, a specific claim as to PVD, by acknowledging in a deferred rating decision. And we invited him to submit additional claims so that we could develop those claims. He denied, and he requested that his hearing loss appeal should continue, and that he did not have any further claims to submit. His notice of disagreements, his initial claim, none of those documents show any allegation of a dizziness, staggering, PVD, or a relationship to hearing loss. This case is simply not like, for instance, in Grimes v. McDonough, the court recognized that if an appellant is originally, for instance, in that case, was diagnosed with earaches, reported earaches in the claims form, and subsequently he was diagnosed with hyperacusis, the board referred the matter of hyperacusis, but this court struck down that reversal and remanded instead because the two claims of earaches and hearing loss were related in the same appeal stream because appellant originally claimed earaches. Here, we do not have an appellant who originally claimed that he had dizziness or staggering or that he wanted compensation for those symptoms.
So that's your position? It was too late?
No, Your Honor. That was only to distinguish Grimes from this case, to explain how in certain cases an appellant may indeed be able to not only get secondary service connection, but also primary service connection, direct service connection, by raising it early enough in the claim stream, by claiming it originally. We do not have a case here where appellant raised this as dizziness or staggering in the very beginning.
Doesn't much of what you've said relate to how the veteran wins a claim and not how the veteran gets a claim heard?
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. To the extent appellant did want the hearing of his PVD claim, we invited him to do so by submitting additional information in a claims form. And to the extent his Form 9 can really be only looked at two ways, either as an argument or as a factual assertion. If it is an argument for an increased rating for hearing loss through secondary service connection or through extra scheduler referral, there needs to be some indication of a relationship in the record. We do not have that indication. If it is a factual assertion that he has PVD, there needs to be some record indicating that he has PVD or a development of that claim. So both ways, we are left with a case where we need more than what we have here to really develop that claim of direct or secondary service connection.
Well, except there was no attempt made to develop it, but except for the uninformative form letter. Isn't at the very least the complete failure of the board to address the favorable lay evidence that he offers, these additional symptoms and this additional condition, the peripheral vestibular disorders. Isn't that problematic? Doesn't that require remand?
It would, Your Honor, had there been some indication, once again, in the record that those are related to the disability on appeal. The board would have been required to address such a theory of entitlement under this court's contours set forth in Bailey. But we simply do not have the factual case here does not meet the requirements set forth in Bailey or the contours that this court set in Bailey, that there has to be at least an assertion of a current condition. We do not have any assertion throughout record of a current condition of PVD. Mr. Bailey, on the contrary, had treatment records showing that he had diarrhea. Mr. Bailey had bilateral lower extremity lymphedema, and we had a relationship of those two ancillary conditions to the disability on appeal. We simply do not have any such relationship here to warrant the board to comment on the issue of compensation for PVD. And to the extent, even if this court were to find that the board erred in failing to comment on those issues, we would submit that any such error was harmless. There is no prejudice to Mr. Wilson here because, again, there is no record indicating a relationship between those two conditions.
Mr. Goyle, may I ask a couple of questions here? You stated that a claim was expressly stated. Did I understand that correctly, or did I misquote you?
A direct service connection claim, Your Honor, or a secondary service?
Well, I was going to ask you that if there was an express claim, was it for a secondary or for a separate claim? And which one was it, are you saying?
It appears from appellant's submission, Your Honor, that this was a separate claim for PVD, so as an entirely different disability, not a claim for secondary service connection for PVD.
So it was interpreted as a separate claim, not a secondary, on the basis, according to you, that there was no evidence in the record to make a connection between the two, PVD dizziness and staggering, and his hearing loss. That there was no evidence that the hearing loss, which he's compensated for, service connected for, caused the PVD.
Correct, Your Honor. And in addition to the diagnosis requirement, there is no diagnosis of PVD. So the regional office requested additional development so they could provide appellant for the testing for PVD.
And that's my second question is, what is the status of that claim, PVD? Is it ongoing or is it?
Appellant did not choose to pursue that claim, Your Honor. Appellant reported that he did not have any additional claims to submit and that his hearing loss appeal should continue.
Oh, so there is no claim in the process on his PVD?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Well, no, his position is, sorry to interrupt Judge Beach, but is it his position that it's included here? Should have been considered by the board below. Isn't that his position?
Respectfully, Your Honor, that is only a position in appellant's initial reply briefs and his response to the court's order. That is not a position that is reflected in the record.
Well, we're not potted palms. We have to deal with a case that's presented to us. Why shouldn't it be sent back based upon the arguments that we've heard and the record before us?
Respectfully, Your Honor, if you could clarify, sent back to the board to do what?
To do what it should have done in the first place.
Respectfully, Your Honor, our position is that the board was not required to address compensation for PVD.
All right.
Because Diagnostic Code 6204, once again, requires objective diagnosis of PVD. So to the extent it should comment on everything that a claimant says in a Form 9, whether it's a related condition or, I'm sorry, if it had been a completely different disorder, for instance, once again, there is no showing that was related to the disability.
Yeah, but these are clearly related. This isn't, as pointed out earlier in the discussion, this isn't a hearing loss claim and then out of the clear blue, the veteran asks for a determination as to a leg injury or some other body part. The manifestations are clearly related to his hearing loss in the mind and the articulation of the veteran. So why didn't the secretary do something about it?
Let's add 2 more minutes so that the secretary may respond.
Thank you, Judge Peach. Respectfully to Judge Greenberg's question, Your Honor, the assertion here, to the extent it is that it is only, appellant's assertion was made in the context of a hearing loss claim, or that it is related to ear condition, because both PVD and hearing loss are related to the ear. Simply having two different conditions relating to a body part is not enough under this court's holding in Bailey, Long, and McClendon to reasonably raise that theory of secondary service connection. Simply, one, as your honors would acknowledge, there could be a completely different body part that affects a completely different body part somewhere else in the body. But to establish that, or to show, or to warrant entitlement to secondary service connection, or to present or raise such a discussion, there needs to be some indication, at least in the record, as recognized by the Federal Circuit in Waters v. Shinseki as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. For the reasons explained earlier, namely that even though Bailey can be extended to Form 9s, there are simply no facts here to warrant an application of Bailey. Appellant has not presented a diagnosis of PVD as required by 6204. He has continuously denied having dizziness. He has not shown any relationship to establish that Bailey relationship between hearing loss and the ancillary conditions to implicate Bailey. Further, even if Bailey is indeed implicated, our position is that any development that was required prior to this court's holding in Bailey is already complete here, because the regional office requested appellant to participate in his BVD claim. Because appellant did not do so, the board was not required to address the issue of compensation for PVD. And for those reasons, the secretary respectfully requests that the court affirm the board's decision.
Thank you. Ms. Tamayo? I think you're on mute.
There we go. Sorry.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. I would like to further address one of the arguments the secretary presented in the supplemental brief and here today, and as the judges also questioned upon, which is the secretary's implication that the appellant's statements regarding PVD and the related symptoms were attenuated or irrelevant to the increased rating claim. In other words, the secretary has been arguing that the appellant did not assert that PVD was related to his hearing loss. However, we argue that the secretary is removing the appellant's statements from their context. The appellant continuously explained that his hearing loss was worsening and he was entitled to an increased rating. In the VA Form 9, which was appealing this exact matter, the appellant was clarifying the reasons why he felt he was entitled to an increased rating, which included PVD symptoms. The appellant also explained that his prior hearing loss examination failed to test for the related vestibular disorders. He mentioned that previously throughout the adjudication of the claim. Both the sentences before and after the appellant's discussion regarding PVD discussed hearing loss and how it has worsened. The appellant may not have used magic words such as hearing loss causes PVD, dizziness, and staggering, but the appellant's intent is still apparent when we view his pro se submissions fully and sympathetically, as required in Hodge v. West, Robertson, and so on and so forth. We assert that the secretary's argument that the appellant's mention of PVD was some standalone attenuated statement is simply inaccurate. We ask the court to find that Bailey extends to secondary service connection claims expressly raised to the board. Therefore, we ask the court to vacate the board's November 2018 decision and remand the matter for the board to properly address entitlement to secondary service connection for PVD or entitlement to other scheduler alternatives. If there are no further questions, thank you, Your Honors.
Judge Greenberg, do you have any questions?
No.
Judge Jakewith, do you have any questions?
No, thank you.
Yeah, and I don't have any further questions. Thank you to both counsel, and the court will take the case as submitted, and thank you for the arguments made.
The court is in recess.